Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. U.S. Supreme Court potentially dealt a blow today to the Alaska law that limits campaign contributions. While an appeals court had upheld the law, the Supreme Court vacated that ruling. The justices told the appeals judges to reconsider the case in light of an earlier case that could call the limits into question. Jim Crawford is one of the plaintiffs who filed the suit.
It shows Alaskans that one person or two people who really care and study can take an issue as fundamental as free speech and take it up to the U.S. Supreme Court and win. It's great.
The Supreme Court noted that Alaska's limit over 2 years is more than $600 lower than the lowest amount the court has allowed in the past, adjusted for inflation. It also noted that Alaska's limit for statewide office is the lowest in the country. Jason Harrow is a lawyer with Equal Citizens, a national group that advocates for campaign finance reform. Harrow says the court could have gone further.
It didn't have any argument, it didn't have any thorough briefing, and it just kind of kicked it back down to the lower court to say, hey, maybe look at it this way rather than the way you looked at it.
The Supreme Court's order was unanimous, but Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote in a separate statement that Alaska's contribution limit is different than the limits in Vermont that the court invalidated in 2006. Ginsburg also quoted from a district court ruling in favor of Alaska's limits. She noted that Alaska has the second smallest legislature in the country and receives much of its revenue from one economic sector, the oil and gas industry. These characteristics make Alaska highly, if not uniquely, vulnerable to corruption in politics and government, she wrote. And this may warrant Alaska's low limits. Democratic Representative Jonathan Kreis Tompkins and Zach Fields both said they would consider setting higher limits if the courts invalidate Alaska's limits. An attorney for a woman suing over initial denial of a permanent fund dividend check because of her same-sex marriage says a state employee indicated there have been other similar cases. Caitlin Shortell, in a court filing, didn't identify the employee, citing retaliation fears. She says the person said check division employees were asked to identify 2019 cases denied based on absence of an accompanying same-sex spouse after Denali Nicole Smith sued. Shortell says she was told about seven cases have been identified. She says the person indicated a prior division director said it would take legislative action or litigation to stop enforcement of laws barring recognition of same-sex marriage. The Department of Law said Friday that there's no one to check the division's knowledge of who's similarly situated to Smith. The Dunleavy administration is defending how it spent federal grant funds as it was working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to consider a rollback of the roadless rule in the Tongass. Earlier last week, two Democratic members of Congress requested an investigation into why some of the grant funds were used to pay an Alaska timber industry group for additional input. An important federal rule that could open up areas to logging was being examined. But as Elizabeth Jenkins from Alaska's Energy Desk reports, state maintains it spent the money appropriately.
The money was given to the state of Alaska by the United States Department of Agriculture in 2018, after the state got a yes on a long-standing ask to re-examine and possibly exempt the Tongass National Forest from the roadless rule. It received the money as a cooperating agency on the decision. The state used more than $200,000 of that federal grant money, typically designated for fire prevention, to pay an industry group for more perspective on economic timber sales. On Monday, Michigan Senator Debbie Stabenow and Arizona Representative Raul Grijalva requested an investigation, seeking more details about potential misuse of those federal funds. In their request, they said, quote, "The Tongass is essential to addressing the climate crisis. It is critical that we ensure this taxpayer-funded grant was properly awarded and used."
We see no misuse of funds.
That's Governor Mike Dunleavy. He has a cold, so he preferred to talk on a speakerphone from Florida, where he's attending the annual Republican Governors Association meeting. Like the state, the Organized Village of Cake was also a cooperating agency, providing important feedback on the roadless rule decision. Tribal government president Joel Jackson opposes large-scale industrial logging in the Tongass. From the grant money the state received, the Organized Village of Cake got some travel funds to be able to participate. Jackson estimates it was a few thousand dollars. Still, he says they struggled with limited staffing to be able to make meaningful comments. He says whether the money was administered and divided up legally or not isn't the entire point.
We don't view the process as being fair.
The governor's chief of staff, Ben Stevens, reiterated there's no evidence to support the claim that funds were misused.
There's none. And so whether it's fair or not, doesn't, we don't understand what that means. If there's anybody, any other entity that could have done that economic analysis, we'd be happy to hear who it is and have them come forward.
The entity is the Alaska Forest Association, a timber industry group. Alaska's Energy Desk obtained documents through state and federal records requests that show how some of the $2 million given to the state was spent. Funds were used to help facilitate a conversation about the roadless rule. Former Governor Bill Walker appointed a diverse group of stakeholders. The committee came up with a menu of six options for the Tongass to be considered by Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue. Later, the Alaska Forest Association was offered contracts to add additional industry perspective, analyzing the six alternatives and providing an economic analysis of the timber. The group has received over $200,000 so far from the grant. A press release from the State Department of Natural Resources says it hasn't billed the Forest Service for the work yet. It could still use the state match for that. Stephen says it makes sense the Alaska Forest Association would do this work.
They're the ones that know the value of the timber industry there.
The request for an investigation into how the federal funds were spent is set against the backdrop of the Forest Service now seeking a full exemption of the roadless rule in the Tongass. The decision has been met with some skepticism in the public Forest Service meetings throughout Southeast Alaska. People have questioned the agency about the state's influence in the process, largely drawing on a Washington Post report that suggested, at Governor Dunleavy's urging, President Donald Trump directed the Secretary of Agriculture to select the full exemption. Governor Dunleavy says he has talked with the president about the Tongass.
So any conversations I've had with the president and asking questions, if he's asked questions about the Tongass Forest, how can we help Alaska, et cetera, my response was to get it back to being operated as a national forest. The roadless rule doesn't necessarily help that forest act like a national forest. It makes it act more like a preserve or a national park.
The USDA Office of Inspector General has 60 days upon notice of the request to issue a response about whether it will be pursuing the investigation that the two members of Congress have asked for. As for the organized village of Cake, they sent an email to the Forest Service recently saying they no longer want to be a cooperating agency. The Forest Service declined to comment for this story. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Add ice sellers to the list of environmental victims in Alaska's native whaling villages. The largely indigenous far north communities have used the underground food caches for generations. The cellars are dug like chambers into the underground permafrost, typically reachable through long shafts at the surface. But they've been rendered unreliable in a new environment. In response, one village built a new community cellar incorporating modern technology. Others are compensating with walk-in freezers. Locals and researchers say the problem has been building for decades as a warming climate touches multiple facets of life, including thawing permafrost and shorter periods of coastal ice that provide protection from powerful storms. One recent study concluded, however, that while a changing climate has great potential to affect ice cellars, there are other factors, including soil conditions and urban development. For many Juneauites, public access cabins offer an escape from town and a welcome change of scenery. But since a cabin rental is usually cheaper than a ferry or plane ticket, they're also in high demand. A new cabin at the city-owned ski area opened for bookings last week. Within hours, 7 months' worth of weekends were reserved. KTOO's Adeline Baxter has more on plans to increase the number of cabins available to weekend adventurers.
Reservations for the new Hilda Dam cabin went live on Thursday. Eagle Crest marketing manager Charlie Harrington says it felt like trying to get Burning Man or Coachella tickets.
We got so many emails, phone calls, voicemails, like, where's the cabin? And it looks like 141 cabin bookings in the first 24 hours.
The cabin is a short hike from the ski area parking lot. It operates like many of the state and federally owned cabins in the Juneau area, except that reservations are from 5 p.m. to 10 a.m. That means the cabin will be open to the public as a warming shelter during the day.
People will be able to ski through there and pop into the cabin and get out of the weather and eat lunches or just to be able to take a break and enjoy the really great view from the cabin.
That's Eagle Crest General Manager Dave Scanlon. He's happy with the response to the new cabin so far. It's just one part of a larger plan to turn the ski area into a year-round recreation destination.
The conversation went along the lines of this being the first cabin, which would hopefully stimulate more interest and desires to maybe raise some more funds and build another two or three cabins on Eagle Crest over the next 5 to 10 years.
That's good news for locals like Michelle Fabrillo. She tried to book the Hilda Dam cabin on Friday, but all of the dates she wanted were taken. She's used to it.
We're always looking for something on the weekends or a long holiday, and so you have to be really on top of it if you want anything.
Fabrillo says it's hard to get those coveted Friday or Saturday reservations at cabins on the road system. A lot of state and federally owned cabins book 6 months in advance.
I have a reminder on my calendar to rent the Windfall Lake cabin for June.
With plenty of demand, a local group is working to build another public cabin north of Amalga Harbor. Ian Fisk is the chair of the Juneau Park Foundation. Fisk says they've already made improvements to the trail where the new waterfront cabin will be built.
The demand that we anticipate is going to be commensurate with all the other public use cabins in the Juneau area. So we're glad to be adding more recreational infrastructure in a way that's going to be fully used by the public.
Fisk says construction should wrap up by late spring. Mark your calendars, because that cabin should be available to rent by summer. In Juneau, I'm Madeline Baxter.
An Alaska organization has announced plans to house at least 300 more homeless families after receiving $5 million from Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos' Day One Families Fund. Catholic Social Services in Anchorage was the only nonprofit organization in Alaska to be awarded the one-time grant from the fund this year. And finally, the most prominent sign of the growing popularity of ukuleles among Anchorage students is East High's orchestra, dedicated to the short-necked relative of the guitar. Anchorage Daily News reported the Anchorage School District has seen a wave of aspiring student musicians who want to pluck the small four-stringed instruments. Officials say the number of students enrolled in a ukulele class at East High has eclipsed those in a guitar class, while the ukulele orchestra has nearly 20 players. East High guitar and ukulele teacher Kyle Schweizer says reasons for the student attraction to ukuleles include affordability, portability, and ease of play, as well as their popularity on YouTube. The instrument is also embedded in the Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander culture of 15% of the school's students. And taking a look at the Juneau Borough and Northern Albertina Island forecast from the National Weather Service tonight, numerous snow showers, little or no snow accumulation, lows in the mid-20s, light winds. In downtown Juneau, that's widespread snow showers, Douglas northeast winds to 15 miles per hour. Tuesday, mostly clear, highs around 30. Northeast winds to 10 miles per hour in downtown Juneau and Douglas. Northeast winds to 25 miles per hour with gusts to around 40 miles per hour. That's it for the KTOO News update for Monday, November 25th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.